So here we are. We're going to be playing a gavotte, which is actually a dance. George Frideric Handel was basically the Baroque period that was between 1600 and 1750. Started with opera, ended with Bach's death. I thought I'd just throw that stuff in for you. And anyway, but Handel was a really cool guy. He was a virtuoso harpsichordist, and that was kind of a really great thing to be because that was sort of like the early conductor. A gavotte is a dance. In the courts of most countries, they would have dances. And dances oftentimes would happen in groups of maybe three, four, five, depending on the period. In Baroque, there got to be more. A gavotte actually is a particular dance that people dance. So in essence, in the fact that it's in 4/4 time, you can kind of get an idea of maybe what those steps would be. I'm not going to dance them for you. Let's just check our intonation one more time. Let's see. See. Telemann, who again lived around the same type of period, the same period as both of these composers, although this guy is a little bit more like Handel than he is Bach. Bach, of course, at that particular time was considered to be one of the old fogies of, real conservative Baroque writing. I can't help but to talk in crowds. I lecture music literature, too, so it just kind of happens. So, if you don't mind a little bit of background here, some people consider it interesting. I do. Okay. Anyway, here's the Allegro by George Philipp Telemann. Thank you. Fantasias are really interesting because they, to a certain degree, are kind of like a written prose that just continues to babble on. It just goes on and on and on and on, and it doesn't really sort of come to a close, and there's no real sort of in conclusion. It just kind of does it, and to a large degree, that's kind of how it's written. It's a sort of a free thought of music composition, a fantasia being kind of a fantasy that we just decided we'd just write down on paper. But there is a certain amount of form to this, and you'll find that this is, as they call, a da capo fantasia, of where it goes into a second movement. All right, so what we have a presto, meaning very quick, then it goes to a largo, which is a slower tempo, and then it'll repeat the presto again. So you'll see a certain cohesiveness in this also. Thank you. making jokes right at the beginning with all of these music stands. You know, we thought, well, this is going to be, you know, a 3-hour composition. I think maybe Siegfried's opera transcribed for It's funny, it's a really interesting thing because when I, my first exposure really to opera was when my mother and father decided to take me over to the Minnesota Opera. And this is way back in the days when they used to do it in Northrop Auditorium. Those who are from Minnesota, I don't know if you know that, that's the University of Minnesota campus. But it was a really, really big place. I think it seats like 5,000 people or something like that. And we were way in the back row, and so I started to get really squirmy after, you know, it's actually Siegfried is a 5-hour opera. And I was 9 years old. I don't know what my parents were thinking. But they paid the tickets, and they were big opera lovers. And so during the intermission, I think that that was really my, from what I remember anyway, that was my first exposure to a highball. So they just kind of, they sort of put me out, and then I always had to struggle to enjoy opera after that. Anyway, I sort of wrote out a program, and I'll make some explanations. Some of those people, and I know that there's been a lot of people coming in. This is the third recital I've given in 3 weeks. And it's the situation is that there are some pieces that I'm repeating from last week's performance, but there are some new ones too. So I'll just, you know, you can go ahead and open up your Newsweek on the ones you've already heard. Anyway, the first piece that I have is Campanas del Albo, which is called Bells of the Morning. And really beautiful piece of music by Enrique Sanse Lamaza. If you listen carefully, you'll be able to hear the bells. This is actually, this particular piece of music is a utilizes a tremolo of where you're actually playing. You know, various notes very quickly, but you try and make it sound as if it was all one line. This is the beauty of violin and many bowed instruments. We're all very jealous of them because we pluck the string and it immediately decays. So it's nice if you, you know, can keep your right hand going long enough to be able to kind of make, if you will, sort of the sort of like a film strip of where you have, what, 32 frames going by per second. We have the same situation with notes here. All right. Thank you. really works out the hands. It's a great one to start off with because it really sort of warms down. Okay. Scarlatti, I love Scarlatti. He's just a great guy. He lived between the Baroque period and the Classical period. It's really interesting because he actually did the bulk of his work in the Spanish courts. This was a time when they knew that they were always, an Italian was always really lucky to be able to get a job in the Spanish court because this, to a large degree, as you know, 1492 was the expulsion, perhaps you knew this, of the Jews and also the Islamic tribes of the Iberian Peninsula. And as a result, they were all of these people that were driven out of the land had to leave all of their riches with them. And this was, to a certain degree, one of the situations of where Spain was actually at its all-time highs financially. And, of course, loved Italian opera, so any Italian composer that came through was immediately snatched up. Scarlatti was, again, a virtuoso harpsichordist. Apparently, there was a gentleman's bet of a competition that happened between him and also Handel, which we had played earlier, and apparently Handel won the harpsichord competition, but yet he was a really good guy and very good composer, Scarlatti was. Wrote over 550 sonatas. One of the reasons why us composers like to embrace his music is the fact, of course, that it does come from the land of guitar. And so, in essence, it has a lot of these sort of, I guess, Islamic sounds sort of embedded into music. You all know the that kind of sound, which is, listen to some Islamic music, you'd find that there were some amazing similarities. So this is kind of the way it is. Anyway, this doesn't sound at all like that, but you can tell that it's sort of from Spain. It's not that Spanish sounding. Okay, here we are. Thank you. The next pieces I'm going to be playing are some etudes by Fernando Sor. Fernando Sor was, again, a Spanish guy, but again, also influenced by the Italians also. So classical guitar, as you would consider the classical period, like Mozart and, you know, many of these other guys. It's funny how this is sort of where, you know, other classical composers. I can't think of any at the moment, but Mozart is one. Kind of easy listening music. I suppose, you know, Beethoven too, early Beethoven was considered easy listening too, but it's funny because all of this strong pathos of, you know, death and dying and, you know, the strong dissonances that you would run into with Bach, people start necessarily liking that so much. It was more of the let them eat cake mentality. And so the thing is that they're a little happier, they're a little less sort of dissonant. There are three of these, number 9, number 3, and number 12.
Thank you.
I watched this show, and he's an astounding, astounding juggler. With his duo, you know, he's doing Johnny Carson and the whole situation. It's really amazing because I kind of envy that art form because, you know, he'll be sitting there and he'll be juggling five pins, and he'll drop one. It'll be like, hey, you know, let's throw in a great joke. You know, it'd be wonderful in music here if you could just kind of go, oops. Right on. It'd be wonderful catharsis for us musicians. Let's see. I'm going to try a couple of etudes here. I'm in the trying mode here. By Bela Lobos. Bela Lobos was a Brazilian composer, and I think he's Venezuelan, Venezuelan composer, and he went to Paris, and it was interesting, around the turn of the century, he was influenced with all of these people. Paris at that particular time was a country that was embracing anything new, anything exotic, absolutely anything that would twist your mind a little bit, you know, namely, you know, Stravinsky, The Rite of Spring, guys like Picasso, all of this stuff, they were saying, hey, great, let's throw money at them. And so this is the situation for Villa-Lobos also. These pieces are a little more 20th century sounding, but they're wonderful in their own right. And again, he was in a climate of where he could try new things, like I'm doing right now.
Thank you.
boy, I'm getting really daring now. I'm going to try the Prelude and Allegro also by Bach, sort of switching things around a little bit. He oftentimes wrote Prelude and Fugues and Allegro. I am omitting the fugue simply because I don't know it. We'll play the Prelude and Allegro anyway. This was originally written for lute. I don't know if anybody really knows what a lute is. Maybe you do. The situation is that it's a sort of a pear-shaped instrument. The neck is considerably shorter. Very, very soft instrument, but it was really the heyday around the Baroque period because this literature that really was very involved was written, and it's kind of amazing that the instrument actually died out, but you know, only now people who are historical scholars really play it. Thank you. There are some pieces of music that I wrote that I've been plugging into every one of these particular performances. And I'd like to start with the first, which is called Romance. Next one, Baby Bossa. I'm a father of three boys. I went through learning how to walk four times, I guess, including myself. And this is to a certain degree something that was inspired by that. I think you'll sort of hear why once you hear the piece. Thank you. slower piece, which is in a rondo, and my wife begged me to not talk about form here because this really isn't that academic. But rondo, you have a particular section. I am going to do it anyway. You have an A section, which we'll just call A, okay? It's a musical thought. Then it goes to a B section, which is contrasting. Then it goes back to the A, which is the original musical thought. Then it goes to a new contrasting theme, which is in a C section, which is something new, and it goes back to A again. And you'll hear the A, and you'll think, oh yes, I've heard this before. And to a certain degree, you do this so that, you know, the music is cohesive. for no other better reason. This is a piece called the Wedding Ring Shuffle, and I got this new appendage on my finger and when I was married, and I used it to as a percussion device. Really doesn't mar the ring much, and I don't know about the finish on my guitar, however. But play one more. This is it's kind of a going joke, and it's funny because I guess composition is personal, and in essence, I met this lovely woman 10 years ago, and or 12 years ago, she reminds me, I guess it's now 12, and we've been married, you know, actually 13 years, and we've been married 12. But anyway, the situation is that I wrote this piece of music while we were first married, and after we were first married, and it's amazing because I just wrote it. I heard this rhythm, and I worked out the piece, and it made it all happen. And so after a while, I thought, well, I'm gonna have to give it a name. So let's look at this rhythm. Let's find out what it is. And believe it or not, there are reference materials that you can look at to find out what these rhythms are. And this rhythm was actually a tarantella. Now, I don't know if any of you know what a tarantella is, but it's actually called a devil's dance. And so it wasn't real apropos for my wife because I did indeed write it for her, but you know, she's forgiven me. And I keep playing it.